All right, brother. We are a few weeks, mind you. So I'm backed up on people asking me, yo, what's going on? I've been busy, man. I've been freaking busy. But we're back. I call this a break room. And I spell it BRAKE. The reason why I spell it that way is because I feel like we also take some time, stop, pump the brakes, and see where we are in life. So this is the break room. And today I have a very special guest, the man, the myth, the legend, the Big Migs, the man. I woke at this man's wedding. What sneakers did we wear? We wore the Converses, right?
The Converses,
The
yeah, the
Converses.
great Converses.
Yo, that's BC, right? And by BC, I mean before COVID. That was BC, right?
That was 2017, bro. I've been married for almost 8 years, bro.
Yo,
That's
time is
crazy.
flying. I didn't realize you got married under the Trump regime.
Don't remind me. But I did have my son under Biden, so that was good. But
Yo,
now I
yeah.
gotta wait another 4 years before I have another
Yeah,
child.
you gotta switch every 4 years. You gotta switch a life event. It's hilarious. Damn, that was
What do you ever do
BC.
with those Converse, by the way, bro? I'm curious.
Good questions. For people who don't know, back in 2017, my boy Miguel, this is Miguel, everybody, when he got married, that was around Thanksgiving, right?
It was
Remember?
the day before Thanksgiving.
Right. So Thanksgiving Eve, 2017. Shout out to the ambulance in the back. But Thanksgiving Eve 2017, remember you had us wear Converses as the footwear for your wedding. Remember that suit? That suit was fire. The tux. But I had it for a long time. Maybe at least 3, 4, 5 years I had it. Maybe when I moved out of Dyckman is where I lost them. Maybe I donated them. I don't recall. I know I don't see them now. I don't see them now. And let me tell you something. I'm a renowned hoarder as far as like clothing.
Yeah,
Like,
but did you wear them again for anything?
yeah. No, I supported them for a while.
Good. I'm
Oh,
glad to hear
no.
that.
No, they had a run. No, they had a run. In fact, it would try. I remember going back now 8 years. Jesus. I remember having to think of certain jeans and just clothing to match up with it because I remember it was a big thing to me. Like, I ain't wasting these. Not just for this wedding, that's it. I'm a sport them, and I'm gonna find stuff for them. So I remember they were important to me, and I grew up admiring Chuck Taylors, Converses, but I was always scared to purchase them and wear them because I'm like, one, how they look on me, and two, like I'm scared of my ankles. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't know how dudes in the 70s, like Dr. Dana. I don't know how they were balling in them.
No, it's for real. If you look at Bill Russell's footwear, bro, like,
Yeah.
whoa, what was
It's
that?
like Jesus sandals.
It's crazy. I pull hammies just looking at that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm like, men were built differently back then, and they just said fuck it more, I guess. Not today. People be like,
You know what it is? They didn't make 40, $50 million, $60 million a year, so they didn't have to worry about them. They broke their leg, they broke their leg. They weren't that valuable to them. Now you give a guy a $300 million contract, and you better make sure he's got some good. Some suit.
And mind you, it's not even just the players who are trepidatious about that. Sometimes at the teams too. The teams be like, sit him down. You know what I'm saying? Like, he ain't playing today. I paid that motherfucker $50 million a game. He ain't
It's
playing today.
terrible. It is terrible, bro.
But it's funny. Let me play devil's advocate for a second because you hear this talk, especially around All-Star weekend and basketball and otherwise. The Pro Bowl, forget about it. For years, it's been like that. But that's a violent sport. But let's keep it NBA or basketball. A lot of times you hear like players are not going hard in the All-Star game because why play defense? You're gonna hurt your fellow man. You're gonna like hurt somebody, and you're not getting paid for it if the game don't count. But then again, people say the game suffers. You know what I'm saying? In the All-Star game and the game in general. So what's your take on that? Do you feel like players should be more like fuck it, I don't care if I'm getting paid for this or not. Let me just ball out. Or do you side with the idea of like, yo, man, you got to save your body for real, quote unquote, real games or the playoffs if you make it playoffs.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think there's a happy medium. I mean, you don't have to be like Stephon Marbury, who was playing at Rucker and diving on the pavement while he
Yeah.
was making $15 million with the Knicks. Like, I mean, he was going all out. You don't have to do that. But I mean, I don't think it'll kill you to throw a hand up. I don't think you can play a little defense and still be safe. And, you know, you don't have to go out there and take deep charges or anything like that. Like, you don't have to go crazy. But, you know, I think you could play a little bit more defense than what they're doing. What they do now is just, it's hard to watch. I don't watch it, bro. They're such great athletes that it's really, it's a shame to watch it because, you know, All-Stars, obviously the top of the league. And, you know, it's an offensive league. You know, there's All-Star players that are just offensive players and not defensive players. But there's some who are both two-way players who are great defensive players. And you don't see that. You know, and it'd be nice to see, you know, an all-star matchup. You know, it'd be nice to see, Kevin Durant go up against Paul George or something like that, you know, and actually like they're playing for something. You don't see that. And, you know, I almost feel like just take the game out altogether, make it a one-on-one tournament.
You
just play it for yourself. You might play a little bit better.
You know, it's funny. What I'm about to say probably does not apply to anything else but basketball because it doesn't really apply to baseball because baseball has a farm system that has minor leagues, AAA. So to keep it just basketball with this next thing I'm going to say is I think there is an underrated, underspoken caveat to the way that people today treat either injuries or load management, quote unquote. I think there's something that's not been spoken about enough. Where I think the kids today, when I say kids, I mean the middle schoolers, the high schoolers, I think they're playing too much basketball. I think this whole AAU system where like, you know, like my nephew, he's in seventh grade now. And he's a hooper. He plays all the time. Yo, and he freaking travels with my sister, his mom, to watch Carmelo Anthony's son play. What's his name? Got a kid's name. Kion, whatever his name is. That's how much he's into it. Those games be like, you know, today's league or not even today's league, like the last 15 years, maybe 20 years, it's just straight up all day long games on a Saturday afternoon, back to back to back. You're traveling every weekend and it's just like nonstop playing basketball all day long at 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. So like I'm not shocked when Jason Tatum is like in his mid 20s, blowing out an Achilles. So I'm like, bro, you probably put too much mileage on your ankles a decade ago. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to let's say a Deion Sanders, who yes, he was a double sport guy, but different seasons he worked different ligaments, he worked different muscles. You know what I'm saying? What he was doing in September in high school wasn't the same thing as what he was doing in May, and you know, you're working out you're doing a full body workout all year long instead of stressing, you know, your freaking Achilles for like, you know, 12 months a year, you know. And there's like, if you're Michael Jordan in the 70s, you know, playing high school basketball, you're probably just doing that. You know what I mean? Like you're playing high school basketball for your team. I mean, for your school team, not for some AAU licensing, for your school team, you have practice after school. You have a game on Friday Night Lights, and then you go home. Where today it's just like non-stop ball. So I do feel like part of this is like, yo, they should probably pull back as far as playing as much, you know what I'm saying? And just strip it down to like your high school, your conference, where you're from, locally, keep it local. That's it. No more traveling around the country at 18 years old, 17 years old to freaking hoop all day long.
I mean, I think it's different from different people. I mean, they're super athletes. You mentioned Deion Sanders, obviously great athlete, but I mean, he knew how to take care of himself too. You ever watch him tackle, bro? Like, this dude was not going all in on the tackle, bro. I once witnessed this dude. There was a running back going in the end zone. It was like a goal line play, and it was just him and the running back. And this dude literally two hand touched him on the back, and got out of his way to the end zone. And I'm like, this dude just played two hand touch with the freaking running back. I mean, it was definitely a business move. Right there. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Deion Sanders because he's a great player. You know, he took care of himself in that regard. Are the kids playing too much? I don't know. I mean, I know we want to keep it on basketball. I know for like baseball, the pitchers, the kids that are pitchers and having crazy surgeries on their arms, they're doing too much for sure.
Yeah, I heard that too.
They're doing too much. And the college is the worst. Like, if I was a general manager of a baseball team, I would never draft a pitcher out of college, because in college, they don't care. Bro, they'll have you throw 150, 160 pitches. Yeah. You don't do that in the pros, and they don't care. They don't care what happens to you once you're done out of that college. And a lot of those college pitchers, they get injuries. Jacob DeGrom, college pitcher. I'll give you another name that's going to hurt you, Matt Harvey.
I knew it was coming. I was like,
so, like, those guys do too much. But back to basketball. Are they doing too much? I don't know. It's hard to say. It depends on what they're doing outside of that. Yeah, I mean, because there's training that goes that's involved. There's a lot of pressure to keep yourself in the absolute pristine condition. And obviously that's what you want, but at the same time, I think you can strain your body out. What age you're supposed to be doing that? Again, you got weight programs. How young should you be on a weight program? Right now I got my nephew, he's 16. This dude is deadlifting 475 pounds.
Crazy.
At the gym. I went to the gym with him a couple weeks ago. This guy's asking, well, because I'm talking about the form of the deadlifts or whatever. He's like, oh, how do you do your deadlifts? I'm like, on my couch with a remote control, bro. Like, I'm not doing it like this. So, but he's 16. Is that good for his body? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But, like, this kid is passionate about that. So, again, you don't want to take away that passion, right? I know when I was a young buck, I was, I was not doing what these guys are doing that are obviously professional athletes, but I was playing a lot of basketball every day, right, all day, whatever. And injury didn't really seem like a thing for me. It was just like, who gets injured? Those soft guys get injured. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not a thing. I wasn't worried about it. And at least as a young man, and again, I wasn't playing on their level. I didn't experience that. So I don't know. Everything you do to your body, I guess, catches up to you. So is that to consider? But I mean, there's got to be some consideration from coaching. Everybody's out to get what they want to get, right? I mean, we're gonna round this out to our boy Thibodeau, right? He played guys until they ran him into the ground, right?
Tell me about it.
He had an agenda of what he was trying to do with his team, but he wasn't taking a lot of consideration of what he was putting these guys through. And they want to do it. And I understand, like, you're a ball player, you're a warrior. You should be out there all the time and you should take as much minutes as they're willing to give you. But you have to understand that, after a while, there's a wear on the body. What age you should be watching that? I don't know. Maybe at every age. I really don't know. But you also have to play a lot of basketball to get good at basketball, right? So,
That's true.
So it's a little tough question to ask. But this load management stuff, it's really ugly, and I don't understand how it's not affecting the game more. I think it will in the future, but I like take it from me. I'm whatever you want to say, middle class person, have reasonable means to go out and enjoy a basketball game. Last year, I haven't gone to a Knicks game in like 3 years. When I went, it was a friend who took me, right? And they got blown out by Cleveland, right? So, I wanted to go to a Knicks game last year. It was around my birthday in January. And I saw the Knicks are playing Milwaukee. And I'm like, oh, Giannis, great player I want to watch. I would love to go to that game. Looked it up. After taxes and everything, it was going to cost me like $5 to $6, something like five something. That's before I pay the money to get down there and get anything parking to eat or drink or anything or park or whatever I do. And anyway, I was like, I could swing it. I could swing that. I won't get another gift from my, like, I'll tell my wife, don't give me another gift. Just give me that, whatever. I could swing it. And last minute, I decided not to do it. And you know why I decided not to do it? Because the thought came to mind that Giannis may not play. He might take the day off for whatever reason. And that would, after paying $600, would piss me off, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm not going. It just so happened Giannis did play, and the Knicks won. They blew him out with Giannis on the court, which I would have loved to see. So I missed out, but I can't imagine how these, how other people do it. I mean, I saw a story that a kid came from, I think, Greece or Europe somewhere to watch Giannis play, and he took the day off.
Yeah.
And he found out about it. He flew his whole family back to watch him another game, which is nice. It's great. But how many times that happens and it doesn't get back to him?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a few things. For that particular, we just said, we left with, I heard about that this season with Jimmy Butler. I guess somebody from Australia came out or something like that. And Jimmy didn't play, but he took care of him. I think it was either Jimmy or Steph Curry, one of them. I think it was Steph, actually.
I feel like that's not a Jimmy thing to do. Yeah. This is my opinion.
Jimmy's like, fuck.
It seems like more of a Steph thing, but I don't know. Like, I didn't see the story. I'm just speculating.
I think it was Steph, actually. But something like that happened with Jimmy, too. Call me on that. The fear you elicited, that is definitely going on with other teams more often. The thing about New York City is, for some reason, well, I know the reason, people want to come to New York. People will be injured in other cities. Injured. But once they know, oh, word, 34th Street, we're going to the Garden next. I'm back. You know, usually people play against the Knicks. They come back to the Knicks because they don't want to pass up playing at the Garden or playing against the Knicks. For whatever reason, you know, people love to play against the Knicks, so you could feel a little safe if you're nervous about paying for a ticket, because usually the Stars come out and play against the Knicks, usually.
But I understand. I mean, that's a fair point, but like
I said, the principle is accurate. The principle of it all, you're right.
For a man like me who loves the game of basketball, who's lived in New York his whole life, who has reasonable means, I went to 3 Knicks games in my life. One was a couple years ago with someone getting me the ticket. It was like late in the season. And I forget how long ago it was, the second one. The first one I remember well was in 99. It was Toronto Raptors first round. 99 or 98? 99, I'm pretty sure. Vince Carter, Vinsanity, was going big at that time. And I was there and I watched Latrell Sprewell shut him down. Shut him down. And they won pretty big by like 14 or 15 points. But that was, and my father got the ticket. He was selling cars and he got a ticket as a tip to some guy he sold a car to. So it was cool. I saw something that you said about, how you fell in love with the team, when you were a kid. You were saying, I fell in love with this team when I was a kid. And I've been a Knicks fan ever since. And you were criticizing people like me. I'm going to admit, I'm one of them who, like, was fair weather fans, were not watching them when they were that bad.
Before I answer that, because I'm trying to remember what I said.
I put you on the spot.
Sidebar, me and you went to the Garden, not for a Knicks game. We went to see Triple G fight. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Chocolate Tito's on the card. A while ago. That's probably like 2012. I remember where that fight was.
And then we went to Hooters afterwards.
Rest in peace, Hooters. Hooters is gone in Paramus. Hooters is gone on 34th Street. Hooters is dying. I think Hooters as a company is done.
I went to one near Albany. I was in Albany, and I was thinking of a place to go eat. I was walking down the street to my car, and I saw a guy with a Hooters shirt. So I Googled, oh, there's a Hooters around here. It wasn't even that close. It was like probably 20 minutes away. I still went.
So just for the culture. Yeah. One more thing before we continue with your question. Listen, man, you said Matt Harvey's name, and that triggered me because game one, what was your feeling like game one, 2015 World Series, and Matt Harvey was just laying eggs or he couldn't get it done. Like, I was just like, what the? Before you answer, the reason why I bring this up, because you brought up Matt Harvey. I was hot last season as a Mets fan. You know, we're rocking and rolling. We're having a good season. I don't know what month it was, but I saw Matt Harvey. I think it was probably the playoffs. And Matt Harvey was like, yeah, like he was, I guess he came around to do like some PR or do like a little marketing for the Mets. And I'm looking on the TV screen like, I can't talk with this guy. I can't even enjoy him rooting for the Mets during this glorious time. I can't enjoy it because I'm so pissed at him.
So listen, I don't actually have any hard feelings towards him. It is what it is. I know the ending of his Mets career didn't end so well. It wasn't so pretty. And the biggest spot he was in was that game one where he blew it, you know, at the end, right? It's a manager decision. And honestly, either way, I can't, it's hard to, The guy was blowing through hitters up to that point, man. Like, the guy was blowing through hitters up to that point, and he just hit a wall. It's hard sometimes to judge that. Like you had a few years ago, you had a Tampa Bay. It was in the World Series when Tampa Bay made the World Series last. Yeah. Can't remember, but they had their star pitcher on the mound. This dude is breezing through like seven innings, and he only had like 80 pitches. They took him out of the game, and then they blew the lead.
Yeah, they blew the lead.
I don't even remember what game that was or anything. But
that too, but yeah.
But I just remember that this dude was cruising. They took him out for no reason. But then again, is what you do what you did to get there, right? So that's stuff that they were doing all year long. So they did it what they've been doing all year long. And more times than not, they would be right. But in that instance, they were wrong. And not necessarily wrong, but you didn't get the desired effect. Because sometimes I feel like you can make the right decision and you get the wrong result.
I agree. Well said. But I'm sorry, you said his name and it just triggered me like fucking mad. I still haven't healed from him pissing me off. That's that series.
It could have been worse. He could have been going to the Knicks game.
I know.
This last series.
I know. Even more bad juju. But yeah, back to your question. I don't recall or remember where I said that. I know recently I had like a little rant about Tibbs, but I don't recall where I said that. But
I think maybe they beat Detroit. It was
or Celtics.
Or Boston. It was one of the two. It was after a series that they had won, and you were talking about fans that, you know, were not part of the losing seasons, and that how you watched them through thick and thin and all that stuff, which I respect. I respect that, Mike, but I have something to say about it.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I probably wanted to say more because there is one more oomph to that sentiment, but go ahead.
Right. As a Mets fan who've been through a lot and watched it all, okay, I can go through a lot.
Which, the way you said that, I can hear the stress.
Yeah, exactly. I felt something there. So let me tell you, I've been through a lot, trust me. And we just established I'm married 8 years, so I've been through a lot, bro. I got battle scars. I'm tested. So here's the deal. Yeah, you know, you can, in my opinion, as a fan, I stopped watching the Knicks, okay, at some point.
Right.
I did stop watching the Knicks. I admit. It's simple, bro. What they were doing was not correct in any aspect of anything. And if you go and watch the documentary on the Knicks over the last 20 years, they didn't have a GM for like a couple years, man. Yeah, what were they doing? What they were doing, insane. Eddie Curry trades, insane. Signing Steve Francis, Stephon Marbury, all those things, those insane things that were going on with the franchise, Isaiah Thomas, all the things that were going on with the franchise. So yes, as a kid, you fall in love, but just like as an adult, when you fall in love, you can fall out of love. And it should be welcome when it's an abusive relationship. And it was a damn bad and abusive relationship until Leon Rose walked in and was given the authority to run this team. And he has done a really good job overall. There's a couple things I did not like, but you know, and getting Thibodeau was one of those, because when Thibodeau was in Chicago, I was like, okay, Cleveland has LeBron James, right?
Right.
And Miami, I think even 1 year when he was in Miami with Wade and Bosch, Chicago Bulls, after losing Derrick Rose, was the number one seed. Like, how's that possible? Like, this guy can coach. How do the Knicks not get a coach like this? How can it? So he goes, he bounces around, he goes to Minnesota. Finally, he comes to the Knicks. And like, wow, they have a legitimate coach. And the guy can coach, and he's won. Now, you can question whether is he the guy to turn around the culture and then can't really win you a championship. Is he that guy? He could be. But definitely the guy won. And, you know, you get rid of him. My whole thing is, like, do you have a plan? Shouldn't there have been a plan if you're going to get rid of your guy? Yeah. Shouldn't you have had a plan? And I don't see, like, viable options there. Talking about Jason Kidd, and what, you're going to give out a first-round pick for? Are you insane for Jason Kidd? Not for anybody. Is there anybody in the league you're going to give a first-round, any head coach?
I wouldn't feel comfortable giving out any assets for a coach in general. I don't care if it's God himself. I would. But there are maybe like one or two people that I'd be satisfied with. One guy in particular I'd be more than satisfied with. So I'll get to that let me address, you said something very eloquent about falling out of love. So I want to address that. But before I address that, let me add more oomph to my original sentiment that you referenced. I didn't articulate myself well. And what I mean by that is I was really speaking to, there's a sector of New York sports fans who weren't just critical about the Knicks over the bad years, but they would like drive and just like, they would nitpick at stupid things and not acknowledge good being done ever. And were very, not just late to the party. It's one thing to be you, Miguel, where it's to be critical and be like, you know what? I can't do this right now. I cannot devote the next 5 years of my life to
dumpster fire. Bro, I can do it, bro. But the way they were doing it, like there was no light at the end of the tunnel.
First of all, to be a Knicks fan in like 08, in like 06, and like there was like dark years, damn near dark decades, where to be a Knicks fan, mind you, I wasn't going to those games in person. You're damn near a sadomasochist. You like self pain. You know what I'm saying? Like it was dark years of like 15 win season, 17 win to hurt myself. You know what I mean? Like if you watch that movie with Tom Hanks, not Angels and Demons, but the Da Vinci Code. Remember that the villain in that movie? He wears like this chalice on his leg.
Yeah.
To simulate how Jesus felt pain. I was a Knicks fan for like a decade. So I understand. I don't begrudge anybody who says, no, I can't do it myself. They're too incompetent. I want my peace. But there are some people out there who were like, there's a special type of bandwagoner and a special type of like, they'll go extremely 100% negative and then extremely 100% positive and like a blip. And those are the ones I'm really talking about. They don't even ease into like analysis, criticism, and enjoyment. They go 180 ASAP. Those are the guys and gals I'm talking to in particular, not really you, because you're fair as far as a basketball fan or the Knicks. You can articulate to me why you don't even respect it as a basketball fan. A lot of people I'm talking to, they're not even basketball fans. They're just fair weather team fans, or nowadays just player fans. And they don't even care about the craft of basketball. They can't even articulate with you why they're critiquing Knicks. They're just telling you what they've heard from talking heads on Frank Isola driving home or for whatever. You know what I'm saying? And those are the people I'm really talking to. Now it's funny you said falling out of love. I felt that way about a few things in my life growing up. You know, in the late 80s to early 90s, I was a wrestling fan. Obviously, you know, it's predetermined. I was a wrestling fanatic. My grandmother took me to the Garden. I saw Bret Hart, perform live. Then around like 95, 96, it got very weird wrestling. I was like, this is weird. This is freaking weird. It's a dry spell. I'm out. And then once the Attitude Era came in, I was like, oh, I'm back. Titties and ass.
Yeah.
High school. So there's that. Boxing is a sport that like this is the longest stretch in my life and adulthood that I've been trying and consistent with boxing. There was a time in my childhood I was in boxing, then like middle schoolish, like 98, 99, I kind of fell off. I was like, all right, this is getting crazy. And then like maybe like mid 2000s, I'm like, all right, I'll be back a little bit. And I found love, and then by like 08, 07, I've been back since, and I'm so surprised that I'm back, because boxing is no favors to your heart and to your entertainment. You know what I'm saying? It can drive you crazy. I have no hair for a reason. So when it comes to the Knicks, I definitely understand where you're coming from, and I like your analogy about you fall out of love, because man, I just listened to this YouTube clip of Bill Burr. And Bill Burr was speaking about Casino, Rob De Niro, Aaron Stone, Martin Scorsese. And he was talking about how, like, he was like, yo, every man can identify on some level with De Niro's character of, like, you have this girl in your life. She's no fucking good for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, she just takes and takes and takes. She tries to break down your self-esteem. You make concessions for her. You look the other way at times when she's fucking up. And he just tried to say, all right, she'll come through for me. Like, she'll be there for me one day. And then she just fucks you over, like, time and time again. And as a Knicks fan, it can be like that. Like, Knicks can be ginger all day long. So I get it.
The way I feel about it is I'll go to another De Niro movie, A Bronx Tale.
A Bronx Tale.
Yeah. How so? Mickey Mantle will never pay my rent. And that's my feeling. Like, listen, what do they care about me? Nothing. Why should I be caring about them? And that's the feeling. But this Knicks team and a lot of their players, including Jalen Brunson, who took less money to be here and do this, I have a little bit more respect for. Right. I believe in this group. I think they need to make a little small changes. I feel like Bridges or probably Ananobi, needs to go.
Yeah.
Just because he makes the big money and he's making the value for what he gives to what he makes is not there. He's a valuable player, don't get me wrong. But he's not a $40+ million player.
5 years, $212 million.
It's just too much for him. So to me, he's the guy that was like, and they signed this guy before he became a free agent. Like, somebody else is going to give him that money? Like,
right.
It's that was a little crazy for me. And him and Bridges together, I didn't see how that was going to work. And I was like, how are they going to, I guess they're going to bring Bridges off the bench, which never happened also. And Bridges is just not really the offensive player you would like him to be. They have to make a little bit of changes. There's a couple of positive things to take from this last series against the Pacers. One is that Cat got aggressive. He stopped settling for threes. He took the ball to the basket. I was saying all season long and the beginning of these playoffs, somebody get on his fiance's Instagram, DM her, whatever you got to do. I don't have any social media, Mike. You know that.
Yeah, I know you don't. Good man, by the way.
Somebody talk to this woman, to talk to this man, and tell him that there's no reason why Derek White on the Boston Celtics can be guarding you, okay?
Right.
There's no reason for that. No reason. That should never happen in life.
It should be a Mighty Mouse.
They allowed it to happen at times, and it was very frustrating. But he got much more aggressive, and I hope he takes that into next season.
Right.
And, this last series against the Pacers, Jalen Brunson did not have a good series. He had a couple of good games, decent games, but for the most part, he didn't have a good series. And he has flaws, and the Pacers exploited that a little bit with their full court defense.
Yeah.
For them to put that full court defense on, and they did it last year, but last year the Knicks had less personnel. So you understand how that happened. But this year, they should not be able to play full court defense like that and not get burned. And they kept doing it and because they were not burning them. In that game six, there was one specific play where they inbound the ball. I think it was Hart who was inbounding the ball. It was a full court press. They inbounded it to Bridges. Bridges' defender went for the steal and missed. Okay? Bridges is now past his defender. And instead of pushing the ball down the court, which they have the advantage because his defender is now passed.
Right.
He gave the ball back to Hart.
Yeah, I don't get it.
If they're playing you like that, you have to beat them. You have to burn them down the other side of the court. Otherwise, they'll continue to do that. You have to make them pay. I don't understand that. I don't understand the philosophy there. I understand why they can do it against Brunson. Brunson's not a speed burner. He's not fast. So they can do that and get away with it somewhat. But you guys got to beat them. Everybody else should be beating them. Bridges should be beating them. Deuce McBride should be beating them down the court. And I think that's why, because of some of that full court press and other reasons also, defensively. Sometimes when Brunson was off the court, they looked like they were better at times. That first game, that 14-0 run was when Brunson was on the bench. And I would argue not even bringing him in the game when they brought him in the game.
There was, in the regular season, midwinter, I don't know, or whatever month that was, there was a good few games where Brunson was out. And OG was lighting up the scoreboard when he was out. And they were having good stretches. They were winning, too. I'm thinking like, okay, Brunson's out. We're going to lose a couple games. They were winning. I'm like, oh, shit. So it kind of showed that, for what you just said, it showed that I read it somewhere. I forgot where I read it. But in the playoffs, I think the Knicks were last in assists of all the teams in the playoffs. And, you know, it shows because as great as Brunson is, he's also a ball stopper. And he holds the ball too long. I don't know what to, I know what to make of that. He's probably a two guard really at heart and not a point guard. Because say what you want about the Pacers, but usually they're whipping that ball around, you know, just pass it around. People are cutting. They're making moves. And I thought you guys were Villanova chemistry best friends where you guys should know your tough spots and can communicate without communicating about where to be. So it's like, what are you doing allowing Brunson to just hold the ball for too long and not make moves? So I'm with you on that. I would say this, though. You brought up Tibbs first. First of all, sidebar. This is a pet peeve I had. Everybody and their mother, the Jamel Hills, everybody and them, people all across the freaking planet who don't even care about New York as a city, as a state, or the Knicks, they have an opinion about this so bad. Anybody expressing their opinion about Tibbs being let go. So let me give you my opinion on that and my opinion in general about Tibbs. In person, you need to set the table and to start dinner. If it's Thanksgiving and your aunts and uncles and your moms, whatever, it's like the kitchen's like already on in the stove and shit, but nobody's cooking yet. It's like, hey, you need someone to set the tone. Someone start cooking. Like, let's get it going. You need that honor. I got it. All right. Where's that? You know, all right, I'm good. Get this in my sleeves. All right. You need someone to set the tone and the culture of the kitchen and of the room for the day and what's going on. But once Big Mama comes in the house, it's like, all right, guys, I'm taking over now. I'm going to really close the show. Back up. Y'all can leave now. It's my kitchen. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to really close the show. And, you know, he ain't Big Mama. He can set the tone. He can start a culture. He can institute a new culture, especially with young guys who have less ego. But I don't feel comfortable with him leading a seasoned team to a quote-unquote championship or conference finals. He's done it. He went to the conference finals with Chicago, I think, once or twice. But
you know, who is Big Mama though? Where's Big Mama coming from? Because I'm not seeing, I don't see Big Mama out there. Really, to be honest with you.
Great question. Before I answer that, great question. Let me just add on to the Tibbs thing. Great question, because that's a valid question. Also, man, it shouldn't take you till May to figure out you have guys like DeLon Wright and Shamet on the bench who can defend. Because, you know, we shouldn't find out in the Boston series, like, oh, or in the last series, Pacers, these guys can defend. They can defend well. Let me play them 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It's like, dude, you had these people all year on the bench. You know, there's games in December and February and January. I'm like, yo, we're up by 20-some points. Get Brunson out of the game. It's 2 minutes left. What the fuck are you doing? You know, I'm a big proponent of last year's team. But Randle, remember, they were up by like 20 against the Miami Heat in January in the fourth quarter late when Randle got hurt. And also in mind, so that team, say what you want about Randle, it's a lot to say, but that team was a finals contender. There was one.
I believe that. And Julius Randle, I am a fan of Julius Randle, bro. I don't give him the heat that other people give him. And this is why. Again, we'll go to value. How much does this guy make? What is he producing?
Right.
So he's not making $40 million a year. He's making $25 million a year or 30 or whatever it is. And he's producing quite a bit. And yeah, if you expect a guy to be a top five player, he's not that. He's never going to be that.
But he's
a darn good ball player with good value and wanted to be part of the city, part of the team.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really excited to see how this team was going to be if all the injuries, not just him, but all the injuries came out. If they were full strength playing Boston in the conference finals last year, I mean, I don't even count the Pacers because they would have ran over the Pacers if they were full strength last year. But if they were full strength, would they have been able to beat Boston? I would have to say, if I'm being honest, probably not. Boston was probably still a better team overall. But I think they would have given him a good run.
Remember, like, there was this stretch in January where they were, like, winning 11, 12 games in a row. Fucking Randle was just passing the ball around. I was like, shit, he must be happy. So I'm seeing him make extra passes and shit. So, you know, they had a good – they looked deadly. But shit happens. You know, spilled milk, can't cry over it. But back to your point about Tibbs and who's left. There's what's his name.
Exactly. There's no Big Mama because you can't even tell me the person's name, bro.
I know his name, but he's controversial because he had to leave Boston because of a sex scandal. Now he's in Houston. He had that Houston team in shape.
But he's in Houston, right? He has a job.
No. What you're saying is accurate. To the whole kid point, you know, I'm not trying to give up a pick for a coach who's out there right now. No one really. I like the guy Johnny Bryant for the Cavs. He was with the Knicks for like 3-4 years prior. The last 3-4 years, and he left this year to go be a Cavs assistant. The reason why he's so he's a name out there because for years he was with Utah. Mm-hmm. Under Quinn Snyder, and he has a very special relationship with Donovan Mitchell since the Utah days, and he's always heralded as he's a great assistant. But I don't mean he'd be a good pro, a good head coach. So you know,
it's untested.
So to your point, yeah, there is no one. So, but man, I guess that just shows rough it was for Tibbs's. What's the word I want to use for Tibbs's reputation? To be fired, because I don't buy the idea that the Knicks are being just like 110% rash or 110% like old Knicksy. Like, you know, but like, I do think there is some, like, to me, when I heard the news, I said to myself, well, you know what? Either option was justified. If they kept it one more year, that's justifiable. He can justify that. You can say, no, he can get one more year before he's done. But if you let him go, I could say, well, if the rumors are true, where some players were frustrated by his non lineup changes over the last 10 months, or that, you know, he just was stubborn in his ways. So, you know, whenever someone gets fired, you start to hear rumors now, like, oh, you know, he was arguing with management about playing Mitch more minutes or not playing him more minutes. Or, oh, Josh Hart had to be vocal during the Boston series that he'll go to the bench. For tips to try it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I don't like that either. You say either stick to it or not, your words. What I would say about Tibbs is he's a stubborn mule that'll get you so far. And it is what it is with him. You know, you live by him, you die by him. But to your point, who else is out there? There is nobody.
He's a stubborn mule. I will grant you that. But when push came to shove and it was clear. Now, mind you, I had to slap him in the face. That he had to make changes, he did. And I will say this, it probably cost him his job, right? So if he stayed that stubborn mule and he did not make changes and they didn't win 2 out of 3 games after losing the first 2 games, they would have been like, well, you know, whatever, they lost. But they wouldn't have known, well, wait a minute, we could have done these changes a long time ago. We could have played these guys a few minutes in game one and not lost that game. There's a lot we could have done. And I think that's what ultimately cost him his job, because he made those changes and they were effective. If they were not effective or he didn't make them, he probably still have a job right now.
A play devil's advocate for Tibbs, you know, it'll help that you give 5 first-round picks from Mikal.
Too much. Value, bro. Value. That's, you know, too much.
Get 5 first-round picks for a guy who's not defending, not nearly as he was for the Nets. Scoring like he was for the Nets. Seems a little comfortable with his friends. That'll help. And, you know, roster construction is not Tibbs' job. So, you know, after that, you know, he can only work with what he works with. He can only trust what he has. I still think he could have trusted Shannon and DeLon Wright more. But I will say this, though. Damn, I lost it. I was going to say something else about Tibbs, but, man, listen, regardless, I'm amused by the public outcry for him by people who are not Knicks fans. You know what I'm saying? Who are more so, I saw something earlier, I think it was a tweet, I don't know, but they were like saying, journalists all year were like, oh my God, Knicks, you play players too much. Oh my God, Tibbs, it's the 2000s, it's not the 90s, well, it's the really 2020s. It's, you know, it's the future, not the 90s. Change up your scheme, change up how you run offices. Oh my God, you're outdated. And what's it? He's fired. How could you do this? How could you fire him? It's like, you know, you're dead if you do, dead if you don't. I want to say this close to the microphone. Unpopular opinion. I don't care that Leon Rose doesn't speak to media. I know it's a thing. I know it's a thing. I know it's a thing that people are saying, like, you got to answer for this. Talk to the media. Get on the presser and let me know. I think that's media who wants clicks or they want sound bites because it's their job to get those. And I respect that. I respect journalism. But as a fan, I don't give a flying fuck if you guys come outside and tell me the mistakes you made. Go the fuck back in the office and fix those mistakes. You know, the more time you're talking to me on the microphone, the less time you're in there doing your job. Who gives a fuck about a circus? I don't need a circus. You know what I'm saying? I don't care for a circus. Like, it's not for me. So I know there's this whole thing about we need more accountability in the media. We don't. Who's honest in the media? You guys elected Trump. Can you knock it off?
Accountability in the media may be a thing, but I don't think it's a thing for this.
I know you fucked up once you make the right choices in July or in August when you shake things up. Like, okay, they recognize people. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know, man. I don't know. Listen, I do think, I know what I want to say to you. I think whether it's Tibbs, whether it's maybe Leon Rose, I think people are falling on the sword for Brunson. What I mean by that is, you know, Brunson, you have some accountability here, because there's no reason why for this series, when Miles Turner guarding Cat, game five showed you that, as you mentioned, there's no reason why you should have been, you couldn't be like, you know what? This ain't my series. Cat, it's on you, baby. Post up, you know, or Cat, it's on you. You take the ball. Like, that should have been Cat's series all series long. Like, you got the muscle, 7 foot tall. Turner can't stop you. Game five showed you that. Like you mentioned, Miguel, he didn't need to score the threes. You know what I'm saying? When he was doing his thing, just get in the paint and get busy. But I do think that Cat was being a little humble about not demanding the ball enough from JB, because I do think JB, right or wrong, he has so much pull in that office and in that franchise, Brunson, at the captain, that who's going to question him? You know what I'm saying?
I understand, yeah. And because he had pull, I assume he was okay with this change. But my other issue is that his father's on the coaching staff. So is there some kind of understanding that the next coach has to hire his dad? Now, his dad is qualified, don't get me wrong, but head coaches should be able to pick their own people, right? If he can't do that, then we're already starting on a bad foot.
Yeah, we're already starting compromised. Yeah, where's the accountability and where is the honesty? I'll let you say, hey, I'm JB, I took less money, but I got my babysitter here with me. That's the trade-off. Or I'm JB, I took less money, but you're getting my boy Mikal. Get it, Mikal. How many picks it takes? You know what I mean? And I could see that happening. I don't know if I fault him for that in a way, because they say if you got it, you got it. If they give you leverage, you take the leverage. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. But at the same time, you know, Jalen Brunson seems like a humble guy. Seems like a guy that you should want to be your leader of a team, because it ain't gonna be Trae Young. It ain't gonna be Ja Morant. So, you know, on that end, he can conduct himself well. But behind closed doors, maybe he's just like the rest of us. Like, I'm taking my leverage. Fuck you. You know what I'm saying?
And he has the right more than anyone to do that, because he took less money, because he came here when others didn't, and because he helped with the turnaround. I say help. He didn't just do it himself. Actually, it's our boy, Julius Randle.
Randle, absolutely.
Who is the one that did it first.
Unsung hero.
And the one that started this turnaround.
Could you give up 200 and... What was it like? He gave like $113 million.
Now, he's no fool either. You know, I don't know if you know this, Mike, but I don't know what year. I think it's in 2 years that their deal is up, the NBA's deal, and they're going to have a bigger contract. So contracts are going to get even bigger.
Yeah.
So he took less now, but I think he might took less now for a shorter time to understand that he's going to get a bigger contract in like 2 years. But, you know, you're taking a risk, because obviously you tear up your knee and all that's gone.
Fucked, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at Isaiah Thomas, Boston Celtics version. It's crazy. Well, listen, man, I grieved. You would call me some nights, and I was like, either I was sleeping, or I wanted to sleep the pain away, or I just was so frustrated.
You've been ducking me since that game one, bro. I called you immediately. First person I called was you, and you did not pick up that phone. And you can't tell me you were sleeping. There's no, I'm not buying that you were sleeping.
Sidebar, before we continue, speaking of calling me, one of the all-time classic Miguel phone calls of my life is a Sopranos episode, Vito. You remember Vito was at a gay bar.
Talking about falling out of love of things.
Yo, I'll never forget that night. I'm watching The Sopranos, and I guess it's a storyline where Vito is found a four. It's at a gay club with like a leather outfit on, twirling. And I see you calling me. And when I pick up the phone, all I hear is, "What the fuck's going on? What the fuck is going on?"
You know, it's crazy because years later, it's maturity. Because years later, I watched that season, didn't bother me at all. No. That's also the exposure, right? So that's years of watching this stuff on TV. And now it's like, it's nothing.
I mean, I got it then. I understood, like, you know, I understand that, like, all right, the dude's gay, whatever. That's interesting. But just the fact that I was, just the fact that they threw me off a little bit, like, I don't remember how many breadcrumbs they used to set up that scene. You know, I don't recall how well they did it, if they did it well writing-wise. But I just remember that scene was just like, okay, so they're going for it. You know, he's gay. And just to see your phone call on the call like this, it's got to be about Sopranos.
I don't think it was the scene when he was at the bar, because I think I would have been all right with that. I think it was when they were in the park together or something like that. That's when it just was a step too far for me. And I was just like, I'm going to watch The Wire.
I'll never forget that phone call. I was like, this is amazing. Hilarious. You were like, going on? And you had to wonder from a writing standpoint, like, no, really, what is going on? Like, what's this guy, David Chase, what's he going through right now? Like, why is he injecting this at this time?
Speaking of that show, when that show ended, you called me immediately and told me your TV was messed up.
Yeah, I remember.
I guess to understand what happened at the end. And I said, Mike, your TV's not messed up. It went black. And I think this meant to happen. This is the ending of the show. And then sure enough, as we're talking, the credits come up and we realized that the TV didn't mess up. That was it. That was the show.
Yeah. You know, with I'm talking about The Sopranos, guys. If you haven't watched The Sopranos, you're crazy. So with The Sopranos, as you know, if you watched it, that's how they ended the series with just the screen went black at the diner that they were at. And you know, yeah, there's a scene earlier that season at the lake house where, you know, Bobby Bacala, he's saying, like, either him or Tony are saying, I think when you go, things just go black or whatever.
Yeah, they say you don't feel it when it happens.
You don't feel it when it happens.
You know,
I get it. And I think in the last year or so, David Chase has kind of alluded to the idea that, yeah, you know, it is what it is. Obviously, you know, Tony gets it. But I have to ask you, for the last few years, and even that moment, did you feel like Tony got killed, or do you feel it was something else?
Yeah, he absolutely got killed. So if you watch the scene again, everything is through, this is what gives it to you. Everything is through Tony's eyes. So when he's watching the guy at the stool at the bar, it's his point of view. When everybody walks through the door and the bell rings, it's his point of view. It's his point of view, his point of view, his point of view. So then the bell rings again, it's his point of view, but it's all black.
Yes, so they the camera shots and the you know, it points to the
Yeah, they were telling you that this is what he's seeing. And then that's it. It was all black.
Mm. Now, I will say this, though. You know, people were frustrated initially. They're like, come on, how can you leave it ambiguous and whatever?
Now, we should have expected it because some of those season finales were just horrific.
Yeah.
There was one where I think it was Jackie Jr.'s funeral and Uncle Jr. singing at the end. Like, what is that? What is that?
Jackie Jr., what an asshole. I was like, Meadow, of course he's no good for you, you idiot. But by the way, one of the most all-time annoying characters of all TV, of all cinema, period, I never could stand AJ. He was fucking annoying from the beginning to the end. He's so heartbroken that this Portuguese chick doesn't want him anymore. Of course she don't want your ass anymore, you Jersey turd. Like, what are you doing? But you gonna put a cinder block on your legs in the pool? You know what? And I was telling her, I'm like, yeah, I'll see you in hell. So he annoyed the hell out of me. He annoyed the hell out of me more than but yeah, at that moment and the years after, I felt that, like, yeah, Tony probably got got. But I always felt like, damn, did I want something a little more definitive or no? Like, if you remember on that series when they were going through that last war, that last series, that last season with Phil Leotardo, that was a bit much how Phil got killed. I went over his head. Sorry, guys.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. If you haven't been there the last 25 years of life. No, I didn't need nothing gory or gruesome. I didn't even need to see it. Tony's death, maybe. But I just felt like the going black and having to wait a few seconds or whatever, it was a little artsy-fartsy to me.
No, it is. It was definitely.
So that didn't bother me, but I was just like, okay, cool. But in the years to pass, I've appreciated more. I'll say that. I've appreciated it more. You know, I've appreciated it more. So yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, back from the phone call. That's where we got on a tangent. Yeah, you were hitting me up, and I was like, man, listen, I can't do it. And part of the reason why I couldn't do it some nights with you were the Knicks is because the Knicks, I don't know what team does it for you. Maybe the Mets, you said. The Knicks are one of few sports teams or hobbies or fandoms, period, that really irk me when they're fucking up. I wonder if they're getting beat. Legitimately, because hey man, you got beat. You know, you're not as good as
like last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Last year was one of the most enjoyable seasons, and they didn't get as far as they got this year, but they played their heart out.
Yeah,
and they played to the max of their abilities.
I'm with it. If you do that, I'm with it. I'm all right. Cool. Salute you. But when you just like, because to your point, you mentioned tips earlier, against the Pacers. For all the lineup flaws that Leon Rose has constructed with the Knicks roster, I still feel like Pacers weren't that much better, if better at all. I still feel like Cat was underutilized. So what I'm seeing for, because yo, Miguel, you played pickup growing up.
There's no doubt, Mike. There is no question. They win game one. You're looking at game seven instead of them losing at six games. You're looking at game seven in Madison Square Garden, where they have every right where they could win. You go, let's forget about game six for a second where they lost by 17 points. They lost by 17 points, game six, right? But up to that point, before game six, they played five games where the Knicks had lost 3 out of 5, right? They had outscored the Pacers, the total of the series, by 6 points, okay? Right. So they lost more games, but they scored more total points than the Pacers up to that point. And they ended up losing in total points by 11 because they lost last game by 17. They played six games. That's not even 2 points per game difference. You know what I'm saying? So they're right there with that team. I could even question whether they're a better team. And that, to me, if you're a better team and you lose, that does warrant possibly getting fired. So that, to me, is argument for firing him. My only thing is, if you're going to fire him, a guy who got you here and has won so much, you got to really know what you're doing. And you can't be giving up picks because we don't have a lot of picks left to give. So you can't be giving up picks like that. And Leon Rose, I believe, has done a great job overall. But Mikal Bridges was a high price to pay. Anunoby is a high price to pay for his production.
So yeah, because of Kemba. You bet on Kemba a year.
Right. But they made great decisions. They got Brunson here. They got Josh Hart. When they traded Josh Hart, I'm like, wait a minute. You gave up a pick and
Cam Reddish.
Yeah, for Josh Hart, like you did that? Is he worth it? Well, we know he was worth it. Absolutely. And that was another thing. And again, I don't want to cry about injuries. Josh Hart had bad knee all season. And that's affected his shooting. And that affected his defense. If you remember 2 years ago, he shut down Donovan Mitchell. He shut him down. Him. And he's not the best defensive player on the team. Anunoby's supposed to be, right? You got Mitchell Robinson on the team, right? So the fact that Josh Hart was a little hobbled really affected them. right. really affected that's them. True. And again, why is he playing so much big minutes at the end of the season when he has a bad knee? Sit him out a couple weeks.
I agree. Truth to power. But like I said, man, it's hard for me to even get up to have certain conversations about the Knicks when they have terrible, inexplicable losses because it's like, man, I don't have the bandwidth to even think about the shit. Yo, game one, when they lost game one, after that game one, score-wise, it reminded me of the Super Bowl when Brady and the Falcons, Patriots and Falcons, it was like, all right, 28-3, Falcons, game's over, or whatever the score was. I'm like, all right. And then they came back and lost. That reminded me of game one. I was like, yo, man, we had the fucking game in the bag. So when I saw that, I said, all right, that game alone affected my mood for like
2 days. I didn't go to sleep till like 1:30 in the morning that night. And I'm calling you half the time. But anyway, you know, you can survive losses like that, especially if it's game one early in the series. Oklahoma City did that, right, against Denver. They blew a big lead, and they ended up winning the series. They only won it in 7 games. They were lucky they didn't lose that series. But they did overcome it. So you can overcome it. But there were several factors that Jalen Brunson got into foul trouble, was out of the game. They went on that 14-0 run. So they kicked their behinds when Brunson wasn't even in the game, which going into the series, you think that that's probably never going to happen, right? It was a high-scoring game, which doesn't favor the Knicks. So you think that's not going to happen. So they were beating the Pacers in their own game. Not only that, there's another thing here also. The rest of the series, no matter what odds the Pacers are facing, they're always going to say, after winning game one, we could win this. We could do this. Yeah. Hope will never go away. Because you did it. And it was just a swing of momentum. And the general feeling of the series just went down the toilet if you're a Knicks fan after that. And then, of course, losing game two, you know, no team has come back from being down 2-0 when the first two games are at home.
Yeah. Well, that's where it gets them after they blew those two games. The best swing of momentum I ever saw in a playoff run was that 7-8 Giants. Like, when they were going to, like, fucking everywhere on the road. Once they beat Green Bay, you know, in that fucking cold-ass game where fucking Tom Coughlin's fucking mustache was fucking frozen, I was like, all right, they might do it.
With all those missed field goals.
They're all missed field goals. Like, because they just kept on the road and just whooping teams.
Well, Green Bay and Dallas was both 13-3 at the time, and Green Bay was thought to be the better team, right? Because Green Bay had won the Super Bowl like just a couple years earlier, I think, right? So they were expected to be the team. To pull that out in those conditions was something. And do you know Giants lore here? All those field goals that got missed, right? So when they went to before they went to kick the field goal, Coughlin had to make a decision whether he wanted to kick a field goal. That was a longer kick than easier kicks he had already missed.
I remember.
Do you know that the kicker went out there to kick it without being told that they're kicking the field goal? He made the decision for Coughlin.
On the fly?
Coughlin was thinking about it, he saw him run out there. So Coughlin just screams, all right, well, he's out there, then effing kick it. And he did it. Oh, and they won the game. But he wasn't sure he was going to kick that field goal there.
God, Coughlin.
The kicker made the decision for him.
That explains Giants in a nutshell the last couple of years. Don't even get me started on depression on that end. Real quick. So today at work, I had a young TA, teacher's assistant, or paraprofessional working with me. Born in 01. Made me feel real old. Born in 01. It would have been no 9/11. We're talking, and she's like, yeah, you know, right now life sucks because I'm making minimum wage at work and my other job, bussing tables and taking serving customers, you know, asking or whatever. I'm making $16.50 an hour. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, so immediately my old mind went back to like 5 years ago working at Modell's when I was making in 02, making $7.17 an hour. You know what I'm saying? So, and then I told them, like, yo, dude, at Modell's in high school, year. I think it's $7.17 an hour to start. And then in like 04, I graduated 03 high school. But in 04, 03, 04, I went to Expo, a Home Depot company subsidiary. I was like $12 an hour. Hit the jackpot. Let's go. So and now they're like, ooh. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, inflation is terrible now. Of course, you're right. But back then, I was like, okay, let's go. Let's get this started. You know what I mean? Let's do this. So I was telling them about, you know, what it was like back then working at the Home Depot and Expo. And obviously, that's relevant to me and you because that's where we met. Can you illustrate for the folks out there, not just retail hell, because I'm sure most people have worked retail hell. If you haven't, you are blessed. But can you explain to people what it was like working at a Home Depot company and all of its intricacies, if you can? Shout out to Home Depot, by the way. We're not in the slant. Well, a little bit, but you know.
What was it like to work for them?
Or just in general, what was it like? Well, take me back to back then. What was life like for you back then at that time in general, 20 plus years ago?
Listen, for me, my career working anywhere, the biggest takeaways are always the people that you work with, more so than the company or anything else or what they do or whatever, is the people, the relationships you get, and it's good and bad, right? And I know you had some bad relationships with some of those people. I remember this one dude who wanted to fight you because you told him I don't know what he did to you that you got annoyed, but you're like, how do you do it? And he's like, how do you do what? How do you suck me off with my pants on? And this dude blew up. And this dude wanted to fight you so bad. And I was like, Mike, how do you say that to somebody, bro? And I don't think you knew him that well either. It was like, but he was very, like, you were like more like a joke, like making fun or whatever. But he took that so seriously. And this dude wanted to tear your head off.
I faintly remember that.
The fact that you don't remember it well is funny also.
It's probably still on his mind right now. Like, my face on a dark wall. Still, oh well, fuck you, suck me up more.
But yeah, for me, it's the people working for a company like that. Like, come on, they don't value you or anything like that. You know, you have management just coming in, different managers all the time. You know, they're not going to be around that long, so
yeah, you know that already.
You know, it is what it is. So you're just there with each other, and and, you know, this is not your end-all, be-all. So, you know, it is what it is.
I would say, you know, as far as companies go, maybe not company, but job sites go, what I did enjoy about being there back then was, I thought it was cool. It was a place to, like, yeah, I worked retail prior, like I said, motels. But I think it was cool to work at a place where, yeah, you got to work retail. It sucks ass. But you also get to learn how to drive a forklift. You know what I'm saying? That's cool. You know what I'm saying? And you get to like just learn different machinery and stuff like that. And you just learn different things about homeware and home products and stuff for down the line. Maybe you don't realize in your 20s or early 20s, but you're like, oh, I should know this for like when I buy my own house.
It's true. By the way, sidebar, I got a Champion toilet. I have two Champion toilets in my house.
There you go.
And I use them like a champion, bro.
There you go. And back then, 20 years ago, you had to know the difference between a Champion toilet and a Kohler toilet and an American Standard toilet. You know, back then you were like, I'll never forget. I learned the art of bullshitting the customer from this dude. I remember one time we're working in stock. This is Jersey era. And this dude's like, he's not from in stock, but he's working in stock. Or he'd happen to be in stock.
Yeah, I think it was the next department over. I know exactly who you're talking about. He's an older white guy, right?
No, not an older white guy. I mean, he was older than us, but he was still young.
Oh, okay.
He was still young, and he had a shaved head, like a low season cut white dude. He's saying, Joe was there. Shout out to Joe. He was saying, yeah, you know, man, what you need next is the flux capacitor. With the flux capacitor, you're able to transfer the water from here to there, and I'm like, where do I know that phrase from? Flux capacitor. Where do I know that freaking phrase? What's the customer leave? They're like, yo, bro, what's the flux capacitor? Because really, you think at that moment, oh shit, I should know this because I'm telling these customers I should know these products and whatever. Bro, what's the flux capacitor? He's like, flux capacitor? You never see Back to the Future? I'm like, oh my God. It's just like, yo. It's just like, oh my God. So that signified how, like, you know, sometimes when you're young, working retail, to your point, you're just having fun in the moment. You're just meeting people, you're having a good time. And it's just
the
like
immaturity.
Immaturity, yeah.
I remember I was working for BJ's Wholesale Club, and I don't know, I was messing with this girl, and we were both like cashiers or whatever. I had a customer go to her and apologize for me. It was hilarious. And the girl just did it too. She just did it. She's like, don't be mad at me, girl. He's a good guy.
BJ's, yeah. Jesus Christ, beat it.
Those. Because I left a job recently, and I was thinking of grand ways to leave jobs. What about, we used to have like mobile walkie-talkies, but you can access the PA system to the whole building.
Why and not?
Didn't somebody put it, they said, attention customers, and then flush the toilet or something?
Yeah. Yo, man.
On his last day.
Good job. Good times. I remember that. Yo, I would tell people, you know, retail sucks in general, like I've said a million times, but to your point, yes, man. The people you meet, make it worthwhile. You know, like, if it wasn't for, I mean, we still love Yuri. Shout out to you, Yuri. You know what I'm saying? Lifelong friendship from Expo. A few others, you know, the Joes, the World, etc. Muhammad has done an episode of this break room already. You know what I'm saying? Mo, shout out to you, Mo. So, yeah, I mean, good people, you know, you meet at the work site because work, it becomes your new life. You know, you spend 40 hours at a spot. That is your world for the that duration of the week. So, and to what you just mentioned, you know, there's definitely something I would suggest, which is dating at the workplace, because that can get crazy. You know that, I know that. But otherwise, man, good times, bro. Good times. And I'm glad I met you there, man. I'm glad I met you at the job, because back then you had the long hair down to your shoulders, pretty much.
And I'm getting light up top. You can't see it from this angle, but I'm getting light up top.
Brother, I was light then. So you good. You good, bro. You good. Trust me. I wonder where Eduardo is at Rendon, Jersey side. I still talk to a lot of people here and there. But yeah, man, it was good times. I'm glad I met you through it. And I'm thankful for the time. But I will say this, though. I would never suggest working retail to other people, because it's just like, man, like, I just kind of work sometimes. Maybe like the 11 to 8 shift, 12:30 to 9:30 shift. I was like, oh, you need those 2 hour breaks at Hooters. You need to milk the clock a little bit.
No doubt. No doubt. And they don't care. Like, they just don't care. They don't appreciate schedules or anything like that. They'll give you any days instead of giving you like consecutive days or something off. Back then,
you hit your job, especially back then, when you go take a bathroom break for like 20 minutes just to play Tetris on your phone. It's like, yeah, I gotta get the fuck out of this floor. I gotta, you know what I'm saying? Or if you were like us, you know, some cats had like little mini booths or mini like areas just to like chill out in, lay down, rest your head for a second. And you need those little respites, because like, yo, man, you know, customers can be assholes. And this is why now, as a consumer, I know for a fact, when I go shopping, which is never online, I mean, never in person no more. When I do go in person shopping or browsing, I am so good about how I speak to sales associates. You know, I'm so understanding. I try to like find the product first. If I unfold the clothes by accident, you know what I'm saying? Like, cause I know where I was 20 years ago. Like, motherfucker, like, what the asshole? Why'd you put that there? Like, you know what I'm saying? So I remember those days.
Yeah, I wish I could say I do the same thing. I don't. If my wife would be upset if she saw me fold a piece of clothing in a store, because I don't do it at home. So there's no way I'm doing it in a store. So
hilarious.
Yeah, no, I let it lie. It is what it is. If I decide I don't want anything and I'm several aisles away from it, it goes right there. That's it.
That's very true. That's very true. And to your point, you get a 2 aisle limit. Maybe a 1 hour limit. If I pass one aisle, it's going to be hard for me to go back.
It's a half hour limit.
Yeah, half hour limit.
If I'm 10 feet away, I ain't going back for that mess here. Just dump it there. It doesn't even matter if it's like a frozen section and we're not in the frozen section no more. It's there, bro.
I hear you, bro. I hear you. I mean, yeah, I don't know. What does that say about us as a society? Are we just like lazy? Are we annoyed? I don't know.
Well, I read something that Jeff Bezos said that he didn't like long-term employees. He only wanted to employ people for less than 5 years.
I wonder why.
And, or maybe less than that, maybe less than 3 years or something. And his theory was that after a certain time, we can't help it. We just get lazy. And it's back to caveman time, right? So like we had to conserve energy, right? So whenever you could conserve energy, you would. And that's just in our DNA. And so any long-term employee would be conserving energy. So he didn't like long-term employees for that reason. Now, there's a lot to say about cost of turnover and things like that and experience and all that stuff. So it is what it is. But that's an interesting take. But for us, I don't know if it was caveman days or just the fact that we're working, we're going to school, we're doing all these things. And we're not, it's not like now, bro, when it's like, right now it's 11:01 p.m., it's time for bed. Bro, we're going all night long doing whatever the heck we're doing. Going to the diner at like 7 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah, man, good times too, man. Good times. You know, I don't know how it was for you, but we were ripping and running in our 20s. I want to say once 29 to 34 hit in that age range, I felt like, oh shit, I'm getting tired. I can't hang like I used to. Like, oh shit, once 36 hit, 37, all right, shop's over. Like, I really need to get home at 8 o'clock and then lay down at 9. So like, you know, now I don't know how this is for you at work, but now I kind of serve as an elder statesman, you know, to young people. That's all young people around me. Yo, save your money. Stack your money. Yo, go travel. Live your life. Yo, don't open too many credit cards. You know, don't be just shacking up with any chick that you want to shack up with. Like, same with the women. Same thing. Like, you know, they'll just trust random dudes at the job or whatever. Just keep your options open. Live your life. And I say that because not enough OGs, shout out to Ron, he was one, but not too many OGs, Vito too. But not too many OGs are out there that can give you game. You know what I'm saying? Tell you how to steer. A lot of life you figure out on your own. You know what I'm saying? Even if you got your parents. And they give me good advice at times, but there's still a lot I have to learn on my own. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh shit, I should have known that. I should have known better. I should have done this instead. So I try to give back to you today, whether at work or otherwise. Like, yo, no. Don't do like this. Do like that. Trust me. It'll pan itself out.
Yeah, it is. But there's, you know, there's the combination of stubbornness and just you. Some people, and they have to experience it themselves. Some people have to feel the pain or make the mistake. They can't be told. Right. Even though logically they can hear it, they have to experience it.
Yeah, sometimes.
And so there's something to that. But, you know, whatever. The old saying, youth is wasted on the young.
Right.
Right. So, you know, they don't know what to do with it.
Oh, you're right. You know, youth is wasted on the young. And I grew up hearing, you know, sometimes you got to touch the pot to know it's hot. You know what I'm saying? On the stove. One thing I am learning, though, as I get older, and let me tell you, I'm the most progressive cat you could find in the last 30, 40 years. Like, I'm a very progressive, liberal person, just naturally. Not even like off a party line shit, just naturally as a person. I've always governed myself to be a liberal progressive. In the 90s, you know, in the 90s when like Ellen was like, tonight on Ellen's show, she's going to reveal she's gay. I was like, so what? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's normal. Like, who gives a fuck? You know what I'm saying? This is not news to me. You know what I'm saying? But I understand for the world it was. But I will say this. I do understand that phrase. I'm going to butcher the phrase. But like, you know, you're the person who's young. It's like liberal. There's a way to phrase it. There's a phrase for it. I don't know if you know the phrase. Where like right. when you're young, you know, when you're young, you're liberal. When you're old, you get more conservative or whatever. I understand that phrase a lot more lately because this new generation of kids, they're too like progressive. They're too nitpicky about every little thing has to be a cause or a right or you got young folks today who they won't have to think about nothing saying, oh no, this is against my rights or no, I feel pressured or whatever. Like they don't want to do nothing. And partially because they've been babied, but I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I know. I hear what you're saying. It sounds like a great segue to another conversation. But I will say that, yeah, I mean, now, I guess the question is, I think it's just so different because you have what's in reality in everyday life, and then you have what's on social media. And because I don't participate in social media, as you know, I miss a lot of things, right? So probably the truth is somewhere in between. But even that can be surprising because some of the things that are out there are just crazy. And we could talk all night about this one, but it's like there's something to do with just sports reflects this, right? Sports reflects this. I see a lot. It's like I say this a lot to another friend of mine. It's like, and we could talk about load management. We could talk about examples of like, is there just some type of duty involved? Is it just like, just be a man, just buck up and do it. Like you're a professional. Like when I was young, they said professionals, the definition is you do whatever it is that you're supposed to be doing. No matter what, doesn't make a difference how you feel about it. How you feel about it. Ben Simmons, his mental is messed up. He can't play basketball, but he can cash the checks, right? Well, let's not get into that.
Oh, you're right.
But it's just insane. I mean, you're talking about one aspect of it, but I'm just talking about like a whole generation of people that you have no better time than to just sit around and think about these things and not go out and live your lives.
Yeah, you're preaching to the fire because duty is definitely something that is lost on society today, especially the young, but in general. Everyone is like, I gotta get mine. I gotta get mine no matter what. And my feelings matter no matter the situation. Yo, I remember growing up, my dad every day religiously at 3 o'clock, 3:30, you know. He had to go pick up my mom from work. And my mom refused to learn how to drive. Came from Haiti to Brooklyn. Never learned how to drive in her high school years and adulthood. He always picked her up. She didn't take the cab. She wasn't cabbing it. Wasn't busing it. And I remember like him picking her up every day. And I'd be in the back seat in the 90s, like bored, like waiting on her to get out the job. Because you know she's taking a long time. I'm like, why the fuck does he pick her up every day? You know what I'm saying? But for him, that was his obligation and his duty. You know what I'm saying? And even if it annoyed him. And I feel like that spirit of just doing what you're supposed to be doing, doing what you need to be doing to get shit done, whether it's in sports, wherever, that shit is lost today. It's like, I gotta just do me, and then I'll worry about the rest.
I think it's okay to also have like, so there's balance in life, right? So your father picked up your mom. That was his duty. But she had duties too, right?
Right.
I mean, whatever it might have been. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything. I mean, like, say, for example, she cooked dinner and that was her duty, right? But it doesn't have to be the woman cooks dinner, right? It could be the men cooking dinner. But everybody is doing something. They're responsible for this. They're responsible for X. And it might look different for everyone, right? Somebody asked me, one of my wife's relatives said, oh, how did your father take care of you when you were a kid? Or I was like, my father took care of me? That didn't happen. My mom would lose her damn mind if my father was alone with me because he wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
That just wasn't his duty. But what he did do is he went to work every day. He left before I woke up in the morning. A lot of times he came home after I went to sleep. So I didn't see him during the week. But he didn't complain about it. He just went out and do it. Now, sometimes he could be a nasty motherfucker if you run into him like in between, you know, he had his moments, but he didn't complain about what he was doing. What he did was his duty, and that's it. That's what he saw it as. And that's what it is. And that's what it is how I try to live my life too. People talk about work-life balance or whatever. Somebody was talking to me about that the other day, and I just kind of chuckled and I'm like, okay, yes, I hear what you're saying. But my balance is that I gotta make sure my job works out for my family because we need it. My wife needs her job too, don't get me wrong. But I need my job to work out and my career to work out. My wife understands that if someone's gonna blossom in their career out of the two of us, it's gonna be me. And she'd rather have that. That's the understanding that we have. And it's okay if it's the other way around and it's the wife doing it instead of the father, the husband, that's fine too. It could look either way, but there's a sense of like, no, how could that be? There's gotta be equality everywhere. No, like take it to sports. Josh Hart is grabbing offensive rebounds and doing the dirty work. He's not scoring the points. Right. That's Brunson's job.
Right. You're right.
And Brunson's gonna get most of the credit because of that's the nice looking job. But Thibodeau and other players on the team know that Josh Hart is very important to that team.
And to your point, that Josh is an unsung hero at times. For that, I've learned being a husband and being a father. Like sometimes your wins are solid wins, solid contributions, and it's just grunt work that you have to do as a duty to hold it down. You know, I remember Chris Rock had that joke. You know, tell your mama her hair look good. Tell your mama the food's good. Tell your mama this, whatever. No one tells daddy shit. You know what I'm saying? That's just how it is. You know what I'm saying? That's just how it is. So. I accepted that a long time ago in many facets of my life. Like, you just got to hold it down to what you're supposed to do, because if not, who the fuck else is going to do? And to your point, before we leave, the quote I was thinking about is, if you are not liberal when you are young, you have no heart. And if you are not a conservative when old, you have no brain. And that's how I feel lately. I realized to myself, like, you know what? I'm still passionately the same old liberal at heart and progressive. But I do realize, shit, I'm getting old. Because a lot of these folks today, they are super like, leave me alone. I move on feelings, not intentions. I move at my own pace. And I only care about how my world is shaped and rock. You know what I'm saying? And I can't live like that.
And that's fine. My whole life, I kind of felt like I was personally a conservative. Like the way I live my life. How I am, I'm more of a conservative type person. But when it comes to my politics and how I feel like the world should be, it should be more liberal. To me, conservatism should be just myself. Like it should pertain to me. I shouldn't be pushing that on anyone.
Right, right.
It should be however anyone wants to live their life, that's how they live their life. But these, to your point, these younger liberals, they want to push what they think is right
on you.
Onto you. And that is a bad thing. And that is how you get the absolute fool that you have in the White House right now. And that's not a political statement. He is a fool. Beyond parting lines,
yeah.
Whatever party you're affiliated with, that man is a fool. I know the fools when I see him. And there you go.
He's a fool, but he was a backlash. A lot of people cut their nose and spark their face by aligning themselves with him because they felt like, well, I'm going to show you guys up and this culture of what's annoying me right now from you guys. You know what I'm saying? And I'll deal with the repercussions when it happens. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, man. I didn't think we could be as stupid as a nation twice, but here we are. Here we are, man. But on that note, bro, I know it's getting late.
All right, man.
Any last words you have? Any parting words you have?
Let's see who. So you named your guy. I'll name my guy. My guy's Jeff Van Gundy. Go get him. He's available. You don't have to give up picks to get him. This dude made the playoffs. I think he coached what like 10 years or something like that? Nine years? Right. He missed the playoffs 1 year. And that was when Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady missed like 70 games combined in Houston. The rest of the time, he's making the playoffs regularly. The rest of the time, he's got top defensive teams.
Right.
So to me, he's the guy that makes the most sense, and so he's my guy. So go get him in that sense. We're talking about value, right? Jason Kidd, if you want to say Jason Kidd's the best guy, fine. You have to give up a first-round pick for him? No value there. You got to get the guy that gives you the value, and that's what I'm all about. And there's no big mama there. There's no big mama out there to finish the Thanksgiving dinner, to your point. So you got to get the best guy. But I have to think that they had some inkling when they fired this guy. That's the only troubling thing to me. It seemed like it was a knee-jerk reaction.
What I would say is you probably had picked the best name, and he was floated around earlier. I saw some stuff about Van Gundy being a possible person as well. He is probably the best candidate as far as all what you laid out. Outside of him, like I said, that go new if you have to with that young guy, Johnny Bryant, but that former assistant for the Knicks. But yeah, I like Van Gundy. He's available. All you said, playoff experience-wise, he knows the culture of the city, obviously, and he's a pragmatist when it comes to the game of basketball. When you heard him talk as a commentator, he always got where he was coming from. You know what I'm saying? I always understood his point of view of the game. And you should agree with him. You should agree with him. I do not need another argument for Mark Jackson. I do not need another argument for some of the other guys. Like, all right, relax, let it go. But yeah, bro, on that note, yo, bro, thanks for joining on the show. I appreciate it. I know you don't do the socials. I know you don't do a lot of this stuff, but I think you did a great job. And once we hang up, just keep the app or the website on because it'll upload your photos. I'll send you the thing later on. But bro, I appreciate it, bro. Be safe out here.
All right, you too, buddy. Later.